This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss.
Good morning, I'm Tan Chung Han, and this morning we are pleased to have Elbern Murty, CEO of DG, and welcome back to the Breakfast Grill, your first as CEO. Now, folks, if you have any questions for Elbern about DG, do send in a WhatsApp to 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. So, Elbern, let's get right to it. A couple of months ago, Sigve Brekke, president and CEO of Telenor, which owns about half of your company, described DG as Telenor's main headache. Telenor is in 13 markets across Asia and Europe. Its Malaysian operations, DG, is its main headache. How do you respond to that?
Yeah. Han, thank you. Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I think with Sigve, you know, Sigve comes from an overall Telenor perspective, and he looks at all the portfolios that they have in the entire Telenor range. And given the different markets that they currently are in, you know, they are in Scandinavia, they are in emerging Asia, and developed Asia. In developed Asia, you have DTAC and Digi in that space.
And it's Thailand and Malaysia.
Thailand and Malaysia. Right. And when you look at these markets, the market is transforming from an extremely voice, SMS-centric environment to much more data-centric usage trends. And it's quite natural. And you've seen this curve in many other developing markets before where, you know, growth, and then suddenly it plateaus out. There's a change in consumer and customer behavior. Added with competition, I think that's also the reason for that comment. But I think more importantly, I think if you look at Telenor's top performing organizations from a profit contribution, Digi is definitely on the top. And that's also part of the reason why in that article was mentioned, where DG has actually delivered on part of their OPEX and their profitability. And that affects the bottom line for Telenor.
Right, and that's from the cost rationalization perspective. But no, again, onto some other comments he made, though, and I quote, "On the revenue side, we see solid revenue development across the board. The only exception is DG in Malaysia." And again, these comments from Becky coming just in July, this past July. So, you know, how are you saying, okay, yeah, fine, on one hand, you can take credit for contributing to the cost rationalization processes for Telenor, but you're not contributing to the top line. Sure. How do you buck that trend?
Yeah, so I think the, fairly pointed out, I think the revenue is where the challenge lies. And I think that's given the industry as a context as a whole. I think he's referencing more Malaysia as a whole and the market in this area. But for us, we have made a conscious decision in 2016 towards 17 to actually move from top-line growth to more overall profitability and margins for the year. And we've also guided in that way. And for us, our strategies actually paid off where we focused on delivering growth in key segments and key areas. So, for example, in postpaid, we have been growing double-digit during that period of time. It is the prepaid market that remains slightly challenging. And there we have a reason to believe that we are basically being able to buck the trend and turn that around.
I hear you say that, but I'm looking at your numbers here. Your net profit has seen 2 years of on-year declines, and it coincides with your reign as a CEO of DG then. So again, I mean, I hear you say this, that you are going to concentrate on profitability, yet the numbers show it's on a decline. So what gives you? When is it going to, again, turn around? Be it revenue, be it profitability?
Yeah. So I think if you look at top-line revenue growth, coming out from the growth period of 14 into 15, 16, 17, we've still been growing ahead of the industry curve in the previous years. I think it was in 16, 17 that the market actually sort of shifted from prepaid profitability into postpaid. Mm. And our focus has been on postpaid in the last two years. And growing almost double digit on postpaid has been one of the strategies. Second part of the strategy is to shift from traditional voice SMS-centric plans into internet plans. And I have to say that we are extremely happy now to see that shift being made. And during that transition, it is always a shift. And it's a shift that we know will have a little bit of an adjustment to be made before it starts growing again. And we see that trend now.
All right, we'll dive deeper into your operations in just a bit. In still keeping with this, the relationship between Telenor and Digi, look, this time last year, there was a Bloomberg report claiming that Telenor is mulling this exit from Malaysia. So, you know, given those comments that Sigve made just a couple of months ago, you know, given this report from a year ago and given your numbers now, how has Telenor expressed their long-term commitment to Digi, to Malaysia?
Yeah. I think Sigve had also an interview recently where he actually was very clear in saying that Digi remains one of their focus areas, and Malaysia definitely as a country as a whole, and then extending that to this region, which is where Thailand and Malaysia is operating in as well. So he's also told that Telenor continues to invest and keep that investment in Malaysia. So that's been quite clear. I think the commitment is also seen in the way we invest in the market. The investments that we've made on the network is extremely clear. Coming from a far number three of the network, we are now basically between number one and number two, depending on the market and where in Malaysia you compare the network to. Mm. So those investments and the way we're driving the profitability, don't forget, Digi is still a main contributor of their bottom line. And therefore, it's extremely important to have that portfolio.
No, but at the same time, your market cap has fallen by almost 10 billion ringgit from 2014 till now. Yeah. I mean, again, Telenor owns about half of Digi. Look, it's not just Telenor, but I'm sure any investor is going to look at those numbers and going to start asking some questions, right? Do I want to hold on to Digi? How do you shore up their confidence levels?
Yeah, I think if you look at the margin development and basically EBITDA margins, that's held extremely well during the period. And if you look at the market cap that you just described, you need to look at the entire industry as a whole and then the entire market as a whole in Malaysia. And I think you probably see similar trends. So I think you need to look at it at a little bit more of a bigger perspective. And given that, I think Digi is performing quite well, given the current market position.
Okay, let's get into this price war that has been talked about for so much over the over the last couple of years or so. You know, you got the likes of Weeby, U-Mobile flaunting all these unlimited packages. In fact, you also joined in the game. You got those infinite plans, 150 and 80 that you launched earlier this year. I think right now you've got that infinite 100 plan that goes on till this weekend, I think. So, you know, is this the name of the game right now? Just trying to throw out as many freebies as possible?
Yeah, I think market will always have different promotions and different offers in the market. I think we won't comment on what competitors are doing, but I think at least for our strategy, I think it's quite clear that my view and what the team is looking at is making sure that we are able to address that segment that is moving from traditional what we know as voice SMS into the internet. Mm. And then you have many ways of providing that. You have plans that suit different segments, different size of wallets, and different spend levels. Whether it's an unlimited and all-you-can-eat offer, or whether it's a plan with a certain amount of quota, we will look at what is that level that customers are willing to pay for, service and network. But it's got to be the whole thing. It's got to be, you know, the size of the quota, the size of the internet, the quality of your network, the service that you provide, and the customer experience that you want to give, right?
But all the things that you described, you know, everyone is just claiming to offer the same thing as well. So how are you going to differentiate yourself? Yeah. Is it just purely price point?
No, I think we've shown quite clearly and demonstrated quite clearly that we're not taking a price position in the market in across everything that we want to offer. I think there are segments that we have actually stepped away from. So, for example, just going back onto the prepaid space, we have actually moved away from extremely sensitive or price challenging areas where we want to move towards segments that are moving towards internet. Mm. So we created plans and packages. We have two plans on the prepaid that is basically focused on internet, driving internet usage. On the postpaid side, we have entry-level plans that focus on moving from prepaid to post, which is an extremely important position for us to take, because those are the guys who are from prepaid moving on to postpaid. And then we have postpaid plans that are catered more for the larger base of the customers, right?
And that's a relatively recent shift, right?
Yes.
Because traditionally you've been more focused on the prepaid segment. Now,
yes.
But in speaking about your subscribers, though, you've got about 12 million subscribers right now, which is about 300,000 fewer compared to the first half of 2016. So, again, you know, is gaining back those subscribers a big part of your plan, or is it a case of making the existing ones pay more?
Yeah, I think we have a number one position in subscriber. So I think we are very proud to have that number one position in subscriber. However, the volume of subscribers will fluctuate based on seasonality. So you'll always get, you know, seasonality of people in and out, tourists, and those numbers will be affected. So that's why the 12.3 to 12. However, our focus has been always about ensuring that we cater for the different groups of people in that 12 million. They're all not the same. They all have different requirements. They have different payment modes, whether it's pre, post. But the interaction with these customers are super important with us. And that's why we are trying to get them onto a plan. And then there's always opportunity to either cross-sell, upsell, or move them into, for example, prepaid to postpaid was an example I just spoke about. Mm. So as the customer matures in their usage, then we're able to shift and move them into the new plans.
Okay, so that's on the revenue side. Let's look at costs then, because you're looking to reduce costs by 1% to 3% per year over the next 3 years. How do you hope to achieve this? Because I hear that Digi is looking to outsource more of your operations. I heard recently there was a big tender exercise with Ericsson, Nokia, Huawei, with perhaps plans to move some of your people to them. And that suggests maybe trying to offload some of your people. So job cuts, perhaps part of your cost optimization efforts?
Yeah, very interesting question, Han. I think for me and the organization, we've actually been extremely successful in taking the Innovation 360 position. And you know that that is also a custom position that we take in the market. But part of Innovation 360 is also looking at our efficiencies within the organization. And that is the way we operate and run our business. At the end of the day, we provide customer experience, connectivity and customer experience. We've got to make that simple and we've got to make it straightforward. There are many, many ways of doing that. So one of the things that we did 2.5 years ago is look within and look within the operations of how we manage the different areas and see, are we doing what we can do the best way we can, or are there new ways and innovative ways to do that? Mm. That has been able to give us a significant amount of savings and actually helped the margins during these 2 years where top line was a little bit slowing down. Going forward, we will look at different options. And you mentioned one of those examples. We will continuously look at opportunities in terms of ensuring that we have the right people and the right competencies in-house or outside DG to provide that service for customers. I think it will be a little bit naive to think that we'll be able to provide all the services in the future, especially with this digital transformation happening, where the need to provide much better network, quality, experience, payment channels. I think it would be slightly naive if we think we can do that all internally. Mm. So my intention is to leverage partnerships and to leverage the competencies that we have internally to provide that experience for customers.
So you're not ruling out moving some people off your books?
No, but we have not moved people out. What we have done is we've been fairly stable on headcount. What we're moving is competencies. Mm. So certain competencies, rather than hire in and train, we would basically work with partners and leverage their capabilities.
All right, coming up in just a bit, we'll speak about your plans to be an internet or digital company by the year 2020 and what that will mean for your customers. I'm speaking to Albert Murthy, CEO of Digi, and this is The Breakfast Grill. Thanks for sticking with us on The Breakfast Grill. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio is Albert Murthy, CEO of Digi.com. Now, speaking about .com, Digi plans to be an internet or digital company by the year 2020. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, Han, I think, you know, when we came from a traditional business of a telco, 3 years ago, I decided that, and, you know, together with the organization, that we need to transform ourselves into being a digital player and being an internet company. Now, what does that mean for a telco is that you sort of probably need to reflect a little bit in terms of what are the areas that you want to move and transform. I'll give you a simple example. So we have lots of physical touch points and physical areas that we provide our customers. One of the biggest changes that we've made is looking at the core areas of our business and seeing, can we digitize them? Again, the reason is we want to serve our customers in the most efficient and fastest way so that they can carry on with what they need to do. And if we believe in that context, then we looked at entire networks, IT, and looked at our capability to say, what is it that we need to digitize? And I don't think it's impossible. What we've seen is we've seen phenomenal growth on getting, for example, a simple app as MyDG, where we have now more than 2 million customers using that app to self-serve and do that. Hmm. The reason why we need to do this is we need to defend our core and our core business and grow our core business and grow new opportunities in the core business. For example, postpaid consumer, we're growing double digits. We have a huge opportunity in terms of the postpaid enterprise side. You know, we have Spectrum, both 1800, 900. 2100 and 2600. We just recently got 900 spectrum, which then allows us to really now serve the wider customer audience that we wanted to always do that. Mm. Now, while we do this transition, I also believe that there's a digital opportunity for Digi. We need to make some bets. And one of the bets that we are making is that we believe that digital will be not only a door opener to these businesses and acquisition of new customers, but it's also definitely a revenue generator going forward.
Yeah, and we'll take a closer look at some of your bets in just a bit. But then in finding that balance between your core, your current core, and this notion of being a digital company, you were quoted as saying that by 2020, IoT, digital fintech, that will make up 10% of DG's revenues and 90% will still be your core. So how do you call yourself an internet company when 90% is still your current core?
Yeah. So I think connectivity is our business, right? So we will always be the company that provides connectivity.
But
you need to add value to those pipes. And I think consumers will want that relationship with those that provide this infrastructure and connectivity. And I think if you look at the developed markets, you've seen that the infrastructure providers provide both connectivity, payments. We, for example, have a direct relationship with customers on payments, and that's a big part of the digital economy going forward. Mm. And I think we've done that for many years, and I think we have the opportunity to digitize the way we do that and continue that relationship.
Mm. Speaking about payments, VCash, do you have a launch date yet?
No, we have soft launched it. VCash is our e-wallet solution that's available now on the stores. And basically, we are soft launching it and building together with merchants. Watch that space. It's going to be quite interesting in terms of what we can do.
All right, just make sure you announce it first on BFM, okay?
We'll do that.
I'm going to hold you to that, buddy.
Okay.
All right. Now, speaking about VCash, and also you launch iFleet. Oh, no, sorry. Before we go to iFleet, let's talk about Telenor's recent acquisition of Muda.my. The classified space, right? So again, given VCash, given this online classified space, what will all this translate into? What kind of experience can DG customers hope to have given these acquisitions?
So I think it's all about integration, Han. I think if you look at, yes, we had core, we have connectivity, we have plans. And then if you have payments and the relationship where the customers trust you in terms of being a payment and a collector, then the next part of it is the services that we are able to put customers together with. So if you look at the e-commerce and online space, and if you look at VCash and the payments that we want to do, and then if you look at connected cars, which you mentioned briefly.
iFleet,
right? All of that will basically enable us to have a much closer relationship with customers when it comes to their digital requirements and their digital life. We won't be able to provide everything. But what we want to be is we want to be that company that is able to help customers get onto their digital connectivity, be it consumers or businesses.
Mm. Now, you want to help your customers get connected, but let's talk about some of those bets. And by bets, I mean I'm referring to DGX, mm-hmm. Which is your mandated venture builder, right? And you've got a whole bunch of companies in different verticals under its portfolio here. So what is the strategy here for the investments and the businesses that have been developed under DGX?
So let me just take one step back. And the digital transformation that I talked about and you were alluding to, the core areas is digitizing our customer journey, right? And there we have apps, services. We have basically digitized our entire interaction with consumers when they walk into our stores. So it's totally paperless. And we also have an app that we've taken now to our entire dealer and our touch points across the whole country. So 100% of our dealers and touch points actually are on digital service capabilities. So that means they're paperless and they're able to serve consumers on a digital way.
Okay.
That's the core part. Then we decided that we're going to look at new digital services. And for example, you've seen us now doing bundles with video partners, music partners. You've seen that now being taken out to market. That's still very much for me part of the core. A year ago, we decided that we needed to look outside of what we do on core business and on digital services besides transforming our core. And that's where DGX was established in 2016.
Mm.
And the intention of DGX is to leverage what we have from an infrastructure, the smart pipe that we refer to. How do we actually ensure that we are able to use that and take new services out to market?
But it's 1 year on. Which of these businesses have you realized? I'm guessing just iFleet?
No. So there are a couple of areas that we focused on. We started broad. When you start up a new area, you need to go slightly broader. Within a year, we've been able to narrow down to three areas. One is connected vehicles. The de-tarification of the insurance has just been done. So if you drive a connected vehicle, be it a company or individual, you actually stand to gain a reduced cost of your policy, insurance policy. And you can see some of the insurance companies now taking that out to market. So we've had that opportunity. Connected cars keep, you know, people safe, but also make sure that you have those benefits economically. We think that's going to be a big area. So we've decided to place a bet in connected vehicles, including tracking and services for that. The other part is on fintech. And Telenor has invested in a company called Value. They've acquired that from a previous company called Prabhu, which is a remittance company. Mm. Through that, we got the e-wallet. Vcash is basically that e-wallet. And e-wallet, if you have 12 million customers and you have a wallet capability and payments, I think it's quite a crucial link. And I believe that we can leverage on further.
But how would that Vcash be different from, say, the Alipays and the Samsung Pays out there right now?
I don't think it's any different. But what we believe is we believe in an open wallet, e-wallet system. Mm-hmm. And we definitely have the scale. In any of these instances in fintech, it's about scale and it's about where customers can use it and how simple is that service. Mm-hmm. So we focused on that. And the last part is, of course, e-commerce, and that will be something that we do in Q4.
But obviously, all these bets are coming at a cost, right? And this kind of brings us full circle here, because your core is seeing declining revenue, mm-hmm. declining profitability. At the same time, you are spending money on these businesses that could potentially disrupt yourself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how do you balance those out?
Yeah. And I actually think that it all goes together, because I think it's better that we look at opportunities in terms of how we drive and defend our core, work into new areas like postpaid consumer and postpaid enterprise. But at the same time, if you don't disrupt the way we do business today, someone else will probably do that. And I think we have a great opportunity with the customers that we have and the innovation that we have in the brand to actually take this brand further into that consumer space.
With the last minute that we have right now, so set the context again for DGX and all these other bets. Is this to future-proof yourself, or is this for a pivot?
It's
staying alive?
Yeah, no, it's to ensure that we stay relevant and that we are able to actually make revenue from these new bets. And I think when you said 90% and 10%, I think we really believe that is really how we should drive this business.
All right. Well, we certainly wish you all the best in your bets and also in your core business. And I certainly hope you will keep us up to date on those developments, Vcash included. Thank you so much. That was Urban Albernmurty, CEO of DG.com. I am Han, and this is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.